Chapter 10, A Storm. Edgar's happiness grew over the next few weeks. Murray had fulfilled his promise and spent a lot of time at the farm. He was a great help with everything. He worked in the vegetable garden at a speed neither Edgar nor Rachel could dream of matching. He kept the barn in better order due to his ability to lift heavy objects. He was handy with repairs and had fixed two drafty windows as well as some loose boards on the porch. He even spent time teaching Edgar how to hunt in the forest. He did all this and was still able to operate his blacksmithing business. Also, Blue seemed to be growing at an exponential rate, and the dog's affection for Edgar hadn't waned. He and Edgar were inseparable. All of the boy's free time was spent playing fetch with the dog and teaching him tricks. Blue had quickly mastered the art of rolling over and shaking hands, and was now tackling speech on command. Murray was impressed with Edgar's ability to train Blue.
"It won't be long before Blue can accompany us on hunting trips," Murray told Edgar. "Then he'll be a dog able to earn his keep."
Edgar was thrilled with the prospect of hunting with Blue. At night he would tell Blue stories he had made in his head of how their hunting adventures would unfold. He told wild stories of giant flying deer with 10 sets of antlers that breathed fire. The dog would sit calmly and listen to everything. He was the best friend Edgar could have ever hoped for. And Edgar wasn't the only shine that had found greater happiness since Murray's arrival. Rachel's life had become easier, and she could now enjoy the little things again. She was able to spend more time teaching Edgar reading and writing. Their clothes were properly mended in a timely manner. Her dinners were more sumptuous since she had more time to prepare them, and the house was something she was once again proud of. In fact, there were evenings when Rachel sat on the porch in the rocking chair and knit, as relaxed as could be, while Murray, Edgar, and Blue roughhoused in the field. She marveled at the seemingly endless reserve of energy that Murray possessed. The man was truly a blessing from the Holy. There were many early mornings when Edgar would go into town to help Murray in the shop. Murray would teach the boy his trade as he completed his work. After only 2 weeks of helping at the shop, Edgar presented his mother with a crudely made fork.
"I made it for you, Mom," he said, beaming.
Everything seemed to be going perfectly for Rachel and Edgar. But at night, Rachel would toss and turn in bed, unable to fall asleep. She couldn't help but worry about what Joe would think of this situation when he returned from his mission. Would he understand that she had desperately needed the help? Or would he be angry with her that she was unable to fulfill her duties as his wife? Would he be upset that another man was spending such a large amount of time with his son? Would he be jealous? Would he have faith that this arrangement was innocent? Or would he think he had been cuckolded in his absence? Rachel worried about all these things, although her fears often manifested themselves as frustration and then hostility toward Joe. "How dare he be upset?" she thought. It was Joe who caused her and Edgar to have so much on their plates. What sort of father was he? What sort of husband was he? Rachel thought back to when she had first met Joe. She had been so young, so impressionable. She had thought he was such an important man. After all, he worked for the Holy. In her youth, men who worked for the Holy had always been able to provide for their families. They were always the most respected families in the village. Rachel didn't feel respected by her community. She felt pitied. Although the men she knew in her youth weren't missionaries, they were preachers, and they never had to leave the village. They could provide for their families and still be there for them. Joe was only able to do the first of those two things, and lately he was having a hard time with that. In the beginning of their relationship, Joe would come back from his missions with ample compensation, more than enough for the family. That was not the case anymore, and Rachel was finding it harder and harder to make ends meet. There were many times she had implored Joe to take a stationary position. She was even willing to uproot her life to another village if necessary. But Joe always rejected her requests for one reason or another. He liked where they were living, he said. He was only suited for missionary work, he said. Rachel had tried everything to make their situation work, so why should she feel guilty now? Yet whenever she arrived at this question, she knew why she felt such guilt. She didn't want to go back to the way things had been before Murray. She didn't think she could go back. It had been so much work, and it had been so lonely. Rachel couldn't deny it. Murray was taking away her loneliness. She would lay in bed and think of the way Murray would smile at her. The way he was always trying to please her and look out for her, just like he was... Rachel cursed herself for her thoughts. She was married to Joe.
She had taken a sacred vow, yet she couldn't deny her feelings for Murray, and those feelings were growing stronger and stronger every day. She would watch him sometimes in the garden, or when he was in the field playing with Edgar, and find herself imagining this was her family, and that Joe wasn't a part of the equation. Imagining Murray was her real husband, and Edgar was her real son. She could remember that night so vividly. Joe had returned from one of his missions with a tiny child, an orphan, he had said. He had saved the child after savages murdered its parents. The boy was no infant, yet still too young to know his parents. So she had sworn to Joe that she would raise the boy as if it were her own and love him just the same. And she had. She did. Edgar was Rachel's whole life. She couldn't imagine living without him. She would never do anything to jeopardize his happiness, and regardless if she was using this to justify her own feelings or not, she would not send Murray away. She knew he was making her boy's life better. Rachel knew Murray cared, and that was enough justification for her. Perhaps this was part of the reason Rachel's feelings grew for Murray. Perhaps it was also part of the reason why she didn't push her feelings for Murray away. She tried to hide them, of course, but no matter how deeply hidden, feelings find their way out if given time. One summer night, as the sun was beginning to dip below the horizon, when Edgar had gone up to his room with Blue to retire for the night, Murray stood at the doorway and prepared to leave for the village. Murray's and Rachel's goodbyes had grown more awkward with each passing night. Lingering moments, uncomfortable pauses. It was as if they were waiting for some inevitability to happen that simply never did. "Well, thank you for dinner, Rachel. As always, it was delicious," Murray said, and bowed his head, trying to hide any emotion his face might give away. He forgot the gesture was futile, given that he towered over Rachel. "You know, you don't have to say that every night," Rachel said with the same guarded smile she had been forcing herself to use around Murray.
I know. I guess I don't know what else to say," Murray chuckled bashfully.
Then Rachel's better judgment faltered. Her words were almost a reaction. "The wind has picked up, and it looks like it's going to rain," she said. "You could stay here tonight, I mean, in the guest room. You could go back early in the morning. No sense in getting wet from the rain. I mean, no, I really shouldn't. The rain should hold off." Just as Murray's words escaped his mouth, rain poured from the sky. Rachel and Murray looked at each other and laughed. "Come on, I'll show you to the guest room." Rachel grabbed Murray's hand and made to lead him away, but Murray wouldn't budge. Rachel turned back to him. "What's wrong?"
"Rachel," Murray said, "I can't stay the night here."
"It's pouring out there," Rachel argued. "Don't be silly."
"Rachel, there's something I'm ashamed to admit to you, but I think it's about time that I come out with it," Murray said, and his jaw tightened. "You're a married woman, and I would like to think of myself as a respectable man. You see, I have feelings for you, Rachel, and I know it's not right. I don't know why I'm telling you this. I'm sorry."
Rachel's body moved without a thought, and she threw her arms around Murray. They looked into each other's eyes and then kissed deeply. Murray never did go home that night. Thunder rolled across the land and shook everything underneath the sky. The rain continued throughout the night in torrential sheets, thrown across the land by violent gusts of wind. The weather pounded Shine Farm, drowning out all other sound and leaving the air inside the house damp. As they lay in bed, the storm was all that existed to Rachel and Murray, apart from each other. The two lovers were wrapped in their own cocoon of noise, separating their consciousness from the outside world. Nothing mattered but their new love. They were oblivious to the skittering of a small mouse across the floor as it darted from one wall into another. They couldn't hear the snores that came from Edgar and Blue sleeping through the storm in the room upstairs. They couldn't even hear the rocking chair rapping against the wooden porch as the wind knocked it back and forth. They heard none of it. So as the gate to Shine Farm swung open and closed, they never heard its creaky warning. They were oblivious to the impending doom each footstep as large boots walked up the porch. They were deaf, even, to the front door as it opened and then closed like the ceiling of a casket. However, in the dark of the bedroom where Rachel and Murray held each other in the throes of passion, A sharp sound suddenly cut its way into their consciousness. Gasping with shock at the sight of their shining intruder, Rachel and Murray found themselves at the mercy of a man scorned. Joe had returned with a rapier at Murray's throat and wild vengeance in his eyes.
"Seems I've been gone far too long," Joe Shine said.
Murray was speechless. He couldn't move. He knew his death was standing in front of him. Rachel jumped out of bed, scrabbled for her clothes, and pleaded with Joe.
"No, Joe," she begged. "Please."
Sweat poured from both Murray's and Joe's brows, one man hot with panic, the other with rage. Rachel continued to plead, but Joe didn't respond to her. He stood poised to strike at any moment. Only his face revealed the gravity of the emotions he battled. Finally, Murray gathered the air to speak, rasping and begging for his life.
Don't kill me, Joe. Please, don't kill me. I'm sorry. Please forgive me."
Hearing Murray's voice ended the battle in Joe's head. His face became resolute, and he straightened his shoulders.
"You're forgiven," Joe said, and he plunged his rapier deep into Murray's throat.
"No!" A yell came at the bedroom door. Rachel and Joe spun to find Edgar, standing wide-eyed at the horrific scene. Tears streamed down his red face, and he gasped for air.
"Edgar?"
Joe's hardened face grew soft as he realized what the boy had seen.
"Come here, Edgar. I'm sorry you saw that. Edgar, please."
Joe walked slowly toward the boy, but Edgar screamed and ran from the house with Blue on his heels.
"Edgar!" Joe shouted after him. "Come back, boy! I'm sorry! I had to do it!"
The rain pelted Edgar's face and mixed with his tears, but he didn't stop running. Nothing can stop him from running. Joe had killed Murray, and the boy loved Murray so much more than he had ever loved Joe. Edgar knew Joe didn't care about him or his mother. Joe only cared about the Holy and his stupid missions. Edgar could barely see where he was going and tripped on a tree root, but his dog was right beside him to see he hadn't been hurt. The boy reached for Blue, still crying as the rain came down.
"You're all I got now, Blue,"
Edgar said. The dog licked Edgar's face and the boy held Blue close. Soon the rain stopped and a cool wind followed. It chilled Edgar to the bone and he shivered.
"We need shelter,"
Edgar said, and Blue wagged his tail in agreement. Once again, they made their way through the forest, and it wasn't long before Edgar and Blue had reached the outskirts of Hamelin. They were careful not to make a lot of sound as they slipped into the village, and when they found Murray's shop, they stealthily made their way inside. Edgar lit the fire, and then he and Blue settled down beside the flames. They were both impossibly tired, and as Edgar held Blue in his arms on the floor, they promptly fell asleep.
"What have you done?" cried Rachel.
"What have I done?" Joe asked, and turned on his wife with venom. "How dare you say that to me, you whore!"
Rachel fell to her knees as the tears spilled down her cheeks.
"I'm sorry,"
she wailed, and covered her face with her hands.
"Where is my son? We have to find Edgar."
Joe stared at his wife as his mind raced. "She's raving," he thought. "She's betrayed me." Rachel was reaching for him now, pleading with him. She needed to find the boy. "The boy isn't our blood," Joe thought. "The woman has betrayed me. The body is bleeding. The body." The man Joe had killed was bleeding in his bed, and Joe had to get rid of the body. He pushed his wife away from him with disgust.
"We can find the boy later," Joe said. "We need to get rid of the body."
Joe's eyes blazed maniacally, and Rachel backed away from him in shock. She no longer loved this man, and she wasn't sure how long it had been since she had. Rachel spit at Joe's feet and ran for the door. Joe didn't pursue her. He had business to take care of.